Morning, everyone. Today's daf is Baba Kama, daf Kuf Yud-Tes, last daf in Baba Kama. We are holding on the top of Kuf Yud-Tes, Amun Aleph, at the two dots, Rav, Zavin. The Gemara in Amun Aleph today is going to speak about the severity of stealing from a person, and it's going to start a Mishnah, which has a lot of dinim, a lot of details about various professions, what they can keep from the work that they do, what they can't, and the Gemara in Amun Beis is going to continue along that theme. A lot of technical discussions, but we'll get right into it. So says the Gemara, Kufi Tesman Aleph at the top. Rav Zavin Shavishta Me'arisa. That Rav bought a bunch of grapevine branches from an artist, from a sharecropper who was working in a certain field. So Amar Le Abaye, Va'atnan Velomi Shomei Peros Eitzimu Peros. Says Abaye, the Mishnah had told us that you're not allowed to buy fruits you're not allowed to buy fruits or branches from people who guard fruits because they're assumed to have been stolen. So how could Rav go ahead and buy these grapevine branches from the sharecropper? Maybe he stole it. So Amar Lei, Rav responds to Abaye, who posed this question from the Mishnah, and he says, Hani mili b'shomer, deleis le begufa da aramidi. It's only true that you can't buy peros, that you can't buy fruits, or you can't buy eitzim, you can't buy branches, trees, from a guardian, from a shomer, because he doesn't own any of the field. Aval aris de isle bigave, ema midanafshe kazabin. But because an aris is considered, again, this is only like a technicality, but an aris is considered to own part of the land, maybe he's selling you the part that belongs to him. Now, an aris doesn't really own part of the land, he really just takes a portion of the fruits, but that's still significant for our purposes because it's possible that the sharecropper is selling you from his own portion, not from the portion of the balabayas, and therefore Rav is justified in buying these grapevine branches from the sharecropper.
Yeah, there's a machloka somewhere about whether peros kaguf or...
Right, kinyan peros,
kinyan aguf, not peros kinyan aguf. So maybe this goes according to the opinion that kinyan peros kinyan aguf. He owns the peros, he owns the field.
Right, but is it that he owns the peros or is it just that he collects some of the peros as wages for his work? Right, so at the time that he's working, l'chora, he doesn't own anything. And then at the time that they divvy it up, whatever the portions are, he gets some as payment for his work. So it could be it's totally not machlokas. It could be separate, but I think Gemara is just speaking sort of technically. It doesn't literally mean that it is lebegave. I think maybe there are different girsas if it's lebegave da'ara or not. But because he's entitled to some of the fruit, then you can buy from him. You don't have to worry that it's stolen because maybe he's just selling you from the part that he owns. Fine. So that's the first story of Rav buying these grapevine branches. Now, Tana Rabbana, we have a brisa which says, Shomrei peros, lochin mehen kshen yoshvin umochrin v'asalan lefneam, v'turtzni lefneam, that you can buy fruits from people who guard fruits at a time when they're sitting out in the public and they're selling, they have the baskets of fruit out in front of them, they have the large scale that they use to weigh the pears in front of them, because the assumption is if they're doing it in such a public way with so much fanfare, then likely it's not stolen, because if it was, the person who owns the stuff would come and see them and get them in trouble. Bekulan she'amru hatmein, aser. But in any instance in which you're allowed to buy produce or any other item for that matter, if the person selling it to you says hatmein, he says go hide this product so that it won't be seen, so that the person I stole it from essentially won't know about it, then it's obviously aser to buy, because yeshur galayim adavar, there's reason to assume that these pears are stolen, that's why he's telling you to hide it, and therefore you can't buy from them. Also, the Braisa says, Lokhin mehen mi pesach agina, avalo me'achore agina. That we could buy peros or other items from the front of the garden if they're selling out in the public at the entrance to the garden. But if it's me'achore agina, if they're trying to sell it to you in the back of the garden in a concealed fashion, then we wouldn't be able to buy from them because it's again likely that they're stolen. So those are some dinim about buying from shomer peros. Now it says Gemara Itmar, Gazlan me'emas muter liknos himenu. If you have a thief, you have somebody that you know stole certain items from the owner, at what point would it become mutter for you to buy from him? Or there's a different gear cell that maybe it should say ligabos himenu. But essentially, at what point are you entitled to buy things from a gazlan, from a thief, without having to worry? So Rav Amar Ajate Rov Mishalo. Rav says, in order to be able to take from a gazlan.
Why do you say that? In other words, if you know it's stolen, you're not allowed to buy it.
Well, so let's just see the machlokas Rav and Shmuel, and then it'll clarify. Rav Amar Ajate Rov Mishalo. Rav says once the majority of it belongs to him. So Rudy's saying if you know it was stolen, then you know it doesn't belong to him. But Rav is saying if most of it belongs to him, and you know that for certain.
It meaning what's it?
It meaning whatever he's selling, right? Gazlan meim is mutter liknos. Let's say liknos him anyway, like the gears that we have in the Gemara. So a thief, whatever he's stealing, let's say it's peros. Let's say it's any of the items that you weren't supposed to take. Temer v'chala v'gediyim. Anything that you're going to be stealing, you're going to be buying from a thief. At what point would it become mutter to take from him? So Rav says, Ashtei rov mishalo. Once you know for sure that most of it is his, in which case you don't know for sure that it's stolen. The majority of his things are not stolen. So Rav says you can buy from him right away because we can assume that whatever you're buying comes from the robe, which does belong to him, and you're unlikely to be buying from the stolen property. Ushmuel amar afilu miut shalo. Shmuel says even if just some of it belongs to him, even if only a minority of it belongs to him, you could still buy from him. Let's see Rashi. Afilu miut mishalo. Towards the top on the right side of the column, on this daf, both columns, Rashi and Tosfos, are both Rashi. You know, right side and left side. So it says Rashi, afilu miut shalo, talinan, v'amrinan hai midi, diyoyevle midi dehu. According to Shmuel, even if only some of it, even if only a minority of it belongs to him, but the rest is stolen, we can be tola. We can assume that the part that you're buying, the part that he's giving to you, comes from his own portion, not from the theft. So does that help clarify it? Meaning,
no,
you know
but
he's
if
stolen.
If you know it's stolen, you're not allowed to buy it.
No, so if you know it's stolen, you can't buy it for sure. But if you don't know for sure, and you know that he has some property which is stolen and some property which is not, then at what point does it become mutter to buy, assuming that it's going to come from the property that he owns? So Rav says you need a majority because, you know, rubo kakulo. And Shmuel says, no, even if you just have a miut, we can make a tliya, we can just make an assumption that it comes from the part that belongs to him. Now, how should we paskin in this machlokas, Rav and Shmuel?
Question.
Yeah.
Is
a gazlan roi for edus?
Absolutely I'm sorry, not.
Yeah, absolutely not. That audio was a little unclear, but is that what
no, the... I'm going somewhere with this, obviously.
Okay, yeah.
Why not? But let's say this person tells the truth most of the time, and once or twice he lied. Can he be an aid?
Not if he's a gazlan.
Yeah, what does a gazlan have to do with the lying? Meaning you're assuming that the gazlan is not really latest because he's going to lie, but I don't know if that's true. The Gemara says that
it's not really latest because he doesn't care about personal property, and most latest.
The gazlan is going to say it's my property. Can you believe him?
No, he doesn't care about personal property. He doesn't care about right and wrong.
I would think you should never buy anything from a gazlan at any time.
Yeah, but I don't know. Meaning. The standards for buying something and hoping, assuming it's not going to be theft, might be different from the standards of testimony. So the Torah says, "Al tashe yadcha ed rasha." So if you have somebody who lies, you have somebody who steals, you're not allowed to use that person for edus. But when you're just buying something, where again maybe the most could be a matana, whatever the case may be, then maybe you're allowed to buy, even if only a miyachelo, which is the way we're going to paskin in a second.
You don't have to do a title search on every apple that you buy.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Roiv Yisrael Ganvehin. You're never able to buy anything.
Right. Well, so let's see how we paskin. So, Orile Rav Yehuda, the Adadaila, Kedivrei Omer, Afilu Miut Shalo. Rav Yehuda ruled, paskined essentially for Adadaila. What's Adadaila? So, Rashi says, Daila is a shamish derabbanan, someone who is a shamish, a servant, an assistant to rabbis. I assume it's related to the lashon that we have by Eliezer, that he's domestic Eliezer. Dole umashke mitoris rabo l'acherim literally means to draw water from a well, but we call adadaila, that's somebody who is an assistant to the rabbis. So Rav Yehuda ruled to him, like Shmuel, who says, afilu miyachalo, you're able to buy from the gazlan. So we see already a very low threshold, a very low standard for how much has to be the gazlan in order for it to be permitted for you to take from him, even if it's just miut shelo, even if only a minority of the property belongs to him, we could be told and assume that the part he's selling you is his own and not stolen.
This is something like the Tekanas HaShuk, where they wanted commerce not to be interrupted, and if you have to worry about everything, whether it's stolen or not, you know, commerce would grind to
right.
A halt.
100%. And then no one will have a way to support themselves. So yeah, we have many institutions like that, Tekanas HaShuk, Shalotin Odelis Bithne Lavin, etc., different cases where maybe, again, I'm not positive, but maybe the Meikar Adin would require a higher threshold. It would need to be Rov Shalom, maybe it need to be Kulov Shalom. But like Moshe's pointing out, if you wouldn't be able to buy anything ever, then you're not going to be able to sustain yourself. So even Miut Shalom, you're entitled to buy from a Gazlan, and hopefully you could find merchants who are not Gazlanim, so you could take without having to worry. Now says Gemara, mamon maser. Let's say you have the mamon, you have the property of a maser, somebody who is moser, other people, somebody who informs about other people to the government. Or Rashi says here, maser, malshin hamoser mamon chavero la'anosim. I saw a different gear set which said the nachrim. Essentially, somebody who reports about your property to other people who are going to come and seize it and steal it. So what are you entitled to do to the property of that moser? So Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, chad amar mutter la'abdo biyad, v'chad amar asr la'abdo biyad. We have a machlokas Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda. One opinion says that you can destroy the property of the mamon, you could take the property of the maser rather. And one position says that you cannot. So manda amar mutter la'abdo biyad, lo yehe mamono chamar migufo. The one who assumes that you're allowed to destroy the property of a moser assumes that his money should not be more chamar than his guf. And if you're allowed to kill a moser, then all the more so you're going to be allowed to destroy his property. Umadam or asr la'abdo, the position, the one who says that you're not allowed to destroy the property, dilma havale zara me'alya, maybe he's going to have some offspring who are righteous, uchtiv, and we have a pasuk in Eov which says, and again, there are different gears as what the pasuk is, what the Gemara is saying, we have yachin rasha v'tzadik yilbash, that the evil are going to prepare whatever it is, a garment probably in this case, and the righteous are going to wear it. So meaning, even if you have somebody who's evil, but they might have righteous offspring in the future, then you're not supposed to destroy their property because let them prepare it, and it's going to be used for someone who's ultimately righteous in the future. Now the Masoros HaShas points out here, and if you look in the Pasuk on the side of the Gemara, the Pasuk doesn't have the word Rasha, it just says Yachin Betzadik Yilbash, and the Masoros HaShas points out that we don't have the word Rasha in the Pasuk, but the Gemara is basically explaining that that's what the Pasuk means. When it says, Yachin v'tzadik yilbash, somebody, unclear who, but somebody is going to prepare this garment, and then the righteous will wear it. So who is it referring to? It's referring to the evil who's going to prepare the garment, and then the righteous will wear it. And that's how you know that you can't be ma'abed, the mamon of a maser. And so Shas points out that in Gemara Pesachim, Daf Mem Tes Mem Beis, the Pasuk is used and appears the way it appears in Eov, without the word Rasha. The Gemara seems to be inserting that word Rasha here to make this drasha to explain whether you can destroy the property of a maser or whether you cannot. Now, says the Gemara, we have a story about Rav Chista. Rav Chista havalei ahu arisa, dahava takil v'yoyev takil v'shakil. Rav Chista had a sharecropper who was very careful to always weigh whatever item he was giving to Rav Chista, and then he would also weigh accordingly the item that he was going to take, and he would take it for himself. Rashi says, takil v'shakil l'nafshe, he would weigh first to give to Rav Chista, then he would weigh and take for himself. Medaktik b'chaluka ve'enu mevater mechelko klum. And he was being so careful about the exact chaluka, the exact split that he and Rav Chista would make, he wasn't willing to be mevater on anything to make sure that Rav Chista would get a little bit more than he would. He had to make sure that everything was exactly the same. So says the Gemara, Salke, Rav Chista removed this sharecropper from his work, and kara anavshe v'tzafun l'tzadik chel chote. Rav Chista said about himself that the wealth of the sinner is destined for the righteous, is destined for the tzaddik. Essentially saying that the portion that the sharecropper would have gotten, the sinner, so to speak, in this case, was destined for me. That's why I removed him, because he was being too careful with the calculations. He was being too extreme in what he was willing to give up and what he was not, and therefore he had to be removed from his position. Now says the Gemara, we have another pasuk. Ki ma tikvas chanaf ki yivtza ki yishal eloa nafsho. What, I wrote some translations of this psukim just to make sure we could get everything exactly right. But essentially we're saying, what is the hope of the person who is godless, even if he benefits, but he steals from another person, and God is ultimately going to take away his soul, ki yisha eloa nafsho. So what exactly does this pasuk mean? So it's a machlokas Rav Huna and Rav Chista. Chad amar nafsho denigzel, v'chad amar nafsho shel gazlan. One person says that the soul that's being stolen here by Hashem is the soul of the person who was stolen from, because that person had his soul taken when he was stolen from. V'chad amar nafsho shel gazlan, one manda amar, either Rav Huna or Rav Chista, says it refers to the soul of the thief, because the thief, in stealing, actually steals his own soul. And they have psukim to support their understandings of the psukim. Manda amar nafsho shel nigzal, the one who assumes that it's the soul of the person who was stolen from, assumes that because dichtib, we have another pasuk which says kain orchos kol botzei betza es nefesh bailav yikach, that the ways of the people who steal, the people who are greedy for profit, is that they take away the soul of the owner, nefesh bailav yikach. So we assume that that means the soul of the person who owns the property, the person who is stolen from, And therefore you see that someone who steals takes the soul, takes the life of the person he steals from, and that's why God is going to take away that person's soul in return for what he did to the person he stole from. And Ma'an Da'amar Nafshu Shal Gazlan, the one who assumes that it's the soul of the thief himself, where is he basing that from? Dichtiv, Al Tigzol Dal Ki Dal Hu, Val Tidake Oni Bashar, Ki Hashem Yariv Rivam, Bekava Es Koveim Nefesh. That you shouldn't steal from the weak, from the poor. And you also should not literally crush the poor in the gate, because Hashem is going to fight their case. He's going to fight their fight. Bekava Es Koveim Nefesh, essentially, he'll take away the life of the person that they steal from. But Bekava Es Koveim Nefesh, I think there's a Rashi here where he says, Bekava Es Koveim Nefesh, Gozel Nefesh Gozleihem, they're stealing the soul. In this case, we're assuming it's the soul of the thief himself that's being stolen. So by stealing and by afflicting the poor and the weak, you're actually stealing your own soul. So now ask the Gemara case. So we have one Ma'an Da'amar who says it's Nafsho Shel Nigzal, it's the soul of the person who was stolen from. And we have one Ma'an Da'amar who says Nafsho Shel Gazlan, that it's the soul of the person who actually does the stealing. So now how is the other Ma'an Da'amar going to respond to the Pasuk, which seemingly goes against him? Ve'idach na'mi haktiv nefesh ba'ilav yikach. The one who assumes it's the soul of the thief which is being taken, we have a pasuk which says nefesh ba'ilav yikach, that you're going to take the soul of the person who owns the property. That sounds like it's the soul of the person who's stolen from which is being taken. So how would the other Ma'an Da'amar read that pasuk? So he would say, my ba'ilav, ba'ilav dehashta. What does it mean when we refer to the owner? That's the new owner, the current owner, the person who's stealing becomes the owner, and it's his soul who's being taken. The one who assumes that it's nafsho shel nigzal, we have a pasuk which makes it sound like it's nafsho shel gazlan, that it's the soul of the thief which is being stolen. So he will explain that pasuk to be ma tam kamar. It's saying basically, what's the reason? Ma tam bekava es kovehem. What's the reason that Hashem is going to punish the person who steals? Is mishum de kavi nefesh, because they're stealing the soul of the person they're stealing from. So each Ma'an Da'amar, whether you assume nafsho shel gazlan, the soul of the person you're stealing, or nafsho shel nigzal, the soul of the person you're stolen from, has a pasuk to support him, and he also has a way to respond to the other pasuk which supports the other Ma'an Da'amar. So that's just a little debate about whose life you're stealing, essentially, if you're stealing your own or you're stealing the life of the person from whom you're stealing. But either way, it's obviously very problematic to steal. And that's in line with the Gemara's next statement. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, kala gozel es chaveiro shavei pruta, kilu notel mishmasel mimenu. Anyone who steals even a shavei pruta, even just a small amount, from his friend, it's as if they're from somebody else, it's as if they're taking that person's life. Shneamar kein orchos kol botzei abasa et nefesh ba'ilav yikach, the pasuk we quoted before, that these are the ways of the greedy, that they steal the life of the owner. Ve'omer v'achal kitzirecha v'lachmecha, and there's another word which is missing from the pasuk, which should be yochlu banecha unosecha, that they're going to eat your harvest, they're going to eat your bread, your children, your sons, your daughters. The omer mechamas b'nei Yehuda sheshafu damnaki ba'artzam, from the theft of the people of Yehuda who spilled innocent blood in their land. The omer el shol v'el beis adamim al asher hemis es hagibonim. And we quote one more pasuk to substantiate this. The Gemara is going to explain why we need all this pasukim. But the pasuk, it describes the sins of Shaul and the Beis Hadamim for killing the Givonim. So my ve'omer, why do we need all these psukim to support this idea that if you steal from your friend, you're taking his life? V'chiteima nefesh didei, amal nefesh banu v'nosav lo, lest you think that you're only stealing the soul of the person you're stealing from, but not the soul of his sons and his daughters. Tashma basar bibanav v'nosav. That's why we have a second pasuk, which is that you're also stealing the lives of his sons and daughters. Lest you think that you're only stealing these people's lives when you don't give payment in exchange for what you're taking. But in a case where you do give payment for what you're stealing, maybe you're not considered to be taking their lives. That's why we have a third pasuk, which talks about the chamas, let's just say the theft of the people of Yehuda. But chamas, we know, is always a chamson is yoiv d'me. The Gemara says, what's the difference between a gazlan and a chamson? A gazlan, someone who steals, does it without giving payment for what he takes. A chamson is someone who steals the object directly and provides payment. So lest you think that you only take these people's lives when you don't provide payment, we have a pasuk which is about chamas, which is about theft with payment, and nonetheless you see that it's considered as spilling innocent blood. And lest you think you're only stealing the person's soul when you do it actively. But if you just cause it indirectly, maybe you're not responsible for taking the person's life. Tashema el Shaul el Beis Adamim al Asher Heim Misas HaGivonim. We have the pasuk which refers to Shaul killing the Givonim, and ask the Gemara, Becheheichan Matzinu Shaharag Shaul es HaGivonim. Where do we see that Shaul killed the Givonim? El Mitoch Shaharag Novir HaKohanim Shayim Aspikin HaMayim Umazon Male Al Abakasuv Kilu Harkan. What it means is, since Shaul destroyed the city of Novir HaKohanim, who used to provide water and food for the Givonim, by killing Novir HaKohanim, it's as if Shaul killed the Givonim themselves. And thus you see all these issues, the souls of whom you're stealing from, the person and their children, even if you give money, even if you do it indirectly. So now the Gemara returns to the discussion in the Mishnah of a lokchim min anashim, that there are certain types of wool garments that you're able to take from women in Yehuda and in Galil without having to worry that they're stolen from their husbands. So says the Gemara Tana Rabbanan, lokchim min anashim klei tzemer biYehuda uklei pishtan biGalil, aval lo yenos vishmanim vesiltos. That you can take from women klei tzemer, woolen garments in Yehuda, uklei pishtan, linen garments in Galil, but not wine and not oils and not flowers. And you can never take from servants or from children. Abishol says, a woman is entitled to sell some property for a 4 or 5 dinar in order to make a kippa lerosha, in order to make a covering for her head. And Rashi says, ve'ina bal makbid, the husband is not concerned about that property that she's selling, given that she's using it for a good purpose. Bekulan she'amru lahatmin aser. Anytime someone you can't or you could buy from tells you lahatmin that you should hide the object, as we saw before, then we assume it's aser to take from them because yeshra gaim ledavar, that these items are stolen. Now gabay tzedaka lochin mehen davar muar aval lo davar meruba. Gabay tzedaka, people who collect for charity, are only allowed to take from women and from these other people. They can only take a davar muat, they can only take a small amount, but they cannot take a davar meruba, they cannot take a large item. And as explained in the Shor Machshava, the reason you could take a davar muat is because we assume the husbands are not going to be makbid on the small amount that they're giving to tzedaka. The habadadin lokhin mehen zeitin b'mida, v'shemen b'mida, aval lo zeitin b'muat, v'shemen b'muat. Badadim, you have people who prepare oils. You could take olives from them and you could take oils from them only through very specific measurements, but you're not allowed to take very small amounts, because here Rashi explains if you have very small amounts, it's likely that they were stolen in a way that the original owners would not understand. They would not detect that something was stolen. So that's why if they're selling you a small quantity, you're not supposed to take it. But if it's a large quantity, then likely the owner knows about it and it's clearly not stolen. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says you could take olives from women during the moed. Maybe the girsa should be changed to b'muat, again, just a small amount. B'galil ha'elyon, in b'galil. Shepamim adam bosh nimkor al petach beito v'notein le'ishta u'mocheres. Because sometimes a person will be embarrassed to be selling in the front of their house. They don't want to open up a yard sale to sell items to earn a parnasa. So they'll give to their wife to do it for them. And therefore, you'd be able to take olives from women in Gala Elyon, if it's a small amount, or potentially b'moed. Now, Ravina ikla lebe mechoza. Ravina went to mechoza, and atu nashi de b'dei mechoza, ramu kame kavli v'shiri, and kabel minai. Rashi tells us, I think, that Ravina was a gabai tzedaka, that he was in charge of collecting for tzedaka. And when he came to mechoza, the women of mechoza brought in front of him a bunch of necklaces and bracelets, and he accepted them. He took these gifts to tzedaka from the women. So Amrle Rabba Tosfa le Ravina. Rabba Tosfa asked Ravina, he said, Vatanya gabay tzedaka mekabel mehen davar muat, aval lo davar meruba. We just said in the Brisa a few lines ago that charity collectors can only take a small amount from people, but they cannot take a large amount. So how could you accept these bracelets and these necklaces? Amrle hani levne mechoza davar muat ninu. He said, yeah, since I'm in mechoza, these items, these necklaces and bracelets, which would have been generally a big thing, were only considered a small thing. As Rashi tells us, Ashirim Haim, the people of Nemechoza, were very rich, and therefore these nice necklaces and nice bracelets were considered only a small amount for them, and that's why it's not a problem for the Gabay Tzedaka, for Ravina, to collect them. Okay, we're entering the last mission of Baba Kama, a bunch of complicated details about various types of artisanship. Mochin Sha'akoves Motzi, Hare Elu Shalo. The threads, I guess, or the cloths that a launderer is motzi, that comes out of the garments, that he takes out of the garments when dealing with them, he can hold on to them. Hare elu shelo, they belong to him. v'she'asorek, the Girsa has changed, I think, in the Mishnah, v'she'asorek, or v'ha'asorek, motzi, hare elu shel ba'al ba'ayis. The cloth, the fibers, that a carter, somebody who's cleaning out the wool or the fabric, takes out, those belong to the owner, those belong to the ba'al ba'ayis. Now, koves notel gimel chutin v'hen shelo, a launderer is allowed to take three threads, which would be on a garment that'd be left there in case you need them for something. The launderer could take those, and those would belong to him. But yotem ikan harelu shabalabais. If there were more than three chutin, they would belong to the owner. Im hayashach or al gabi halavan, notel etakol. If these threads were black and they were on a white garment, then you could take as many of them as you want. You could take all of them. Because as Rashi explains, the black on the white garment is considered meguna. It's something which is not nice. It doesn't match with the color scheme. And therefore, they're not desired by the owner. And you could take them off the garment. Hachaya chashir et achut kdei litbor bo. Umatli shei gimol gimol hare elu shel ba'al ba'ayis. If the threader, if a chaya, if the tailor leaves over a thread which is long enough to be able to use to sew, or if there's a matlit, there's a cloth which is gimel al gimel at bos, which is considered a significant shear, then both of these things would belong to the owner. Masha harash motzi b'matzad harei elu shelo uvakashil shel ba'al ba'ayis. What the carpenter takes out using, these are two different types of tools, using a matzad, which is like an adz, which is a specific type, I had to look these things up, but it's a specific type of axe, that would belong to the carpenter. Uvakashil, if he's using another type of axe, that would belong to the ba'al ba'ayis, and the Gemara is going to explain what the difference is between all these types of tools.
One is small and one is larger.
Right, one is, right, exactly.
Adz is small.
I think adz is large.
Adz is something that's small.
Adz is small? Okay, from what I saw, I thought adz was large.
Adz is large.
But the Gemara is going to clarify. You're right. Adz is small. Yeah, adz is small. The Gemara is going to explain like that. Good. And the axe belonged to the ba'al ba'ayis. The Imaya Osa, eight cell ba'al ba'ayis, af hanesarim, or the gear says change, af hanesores, shel ba'al ba'ayis. If you're working, let's say, literally in the property, in the domain of the ba'al ba'ayis, then even the sawdust, even the smallest things that emerge from the carpentry process would belong to the ba'al ba'ayis. Says the Gemara, Tan Rabbana, lo chim mochim min akoves mipnei she'en shelo. You can take cloth, you can buy cloth from a launderer because the cloth belongs to him. How do we know that? Because the Mishnah just said, Mochen Jacobus Motzi, Hare Elu Shalom, that those cloths belong to the launderer, and therefore you're allowed to buy them because they're not stolen. Hakobus Notel Shnei Chutin HaAlyonim. The Koves, the launderer, can take the two upper threads, Vehen Shalom, and they belong to him. Velo Yatil Bo Yoter Mishlosha Chuvin. And you shouldn't put in the garment, the launderer shouldn't put in the garment more than three stitches. Velo Yisro Kabeged Lishtayo El Arvo. You shouldn't clean out the garment in one direction, in the direction of the warp of the cloth. El Arvo, to the direction of the weft. We have these two directions that you weave. In one direction you have threads there, and then you thread through the other way. So you should go in the direction of the warp and not the direction, the direction of the weft and not the direction of the warp. You should even out the garment lengthwise, but not widthwise. And if in order to smoothen out the garment, to make it even, you have to even take off an entire tefach of cloth, Rashi says, you'd be permitted to do that up until a tefach in order to make it smooth. Now, Amar Mar, Shnei Chutin, we had just said in this Tanur Rabbanan, in this Braisa, that the launderer is allowed to take two threads. But as the Gemara ba'anantanan shalosh, in our Mishnah we said that the launderer can take three threads. It says the Gemara lokasha haba'alimi v'habiktini. It's not a stira. If you have large threads, then you can only take two. But if you have small threads, then you're able to take up two, three. So when the Mishnah said three, that was referring to small threads. And when the Braisa said only two, those were big threads. Now v'lo yisro kabeged lishtoyo el orvo. We said that you shouldn't clean out the garment in the direction of the warp, rather in the direction of the weft. Batanya ifcha, but we have a brisa which says the opposite. It says Gemara lokasha ha beglima and ha besarbala. It depends what type of garment you're dealing with. If you're dealing with just a regular garment, a glima, says Rashi, talis hasuya lechol yom, a garment that you'd wear every day. When you clean it out in the direction of the warp, it's likely to tear. Thus, you should clean it out in the direction of the weft. But besarbila, Rashi says, is asui l'chavru l'noi. It's some type of jacket or cape, which is very honorable and very beautiful. When you do it in the direction of the warp, it's actually better. So you're supposed to do it in that direction. And that explains the stira between the two braisas. It just depends what type of garment you're dealing with. We said you shouldn't put the koves, the launderer shouldn't put more than three stitches into the garment. So by Rabbi Yirmiya, am tuyei va'atuyei chad, odilma am tuyei va'atuyei tre. When you're sewing, is going in one direction considered a whole stitch? Going in one direction and then coming back and forth, is that considered one stitch? Or is back and forth considered two stitches because each direction is considered one? Going this way is considered one stitch, and going back the other way is considered another stitch. This is a question that comes up often when dealing with cloth. Mr. Shatz points out this comes up in Menachos and also in Nida, in the Gilyan Hashas, etc. Says you have another one in Chulin. But the Gemara says, take you, we're not sure if going back and forth is considered two or going back and forth is only considered one. We said that you should even out the garment lengthwise and not widthwise. But we have a brisa which says you should go widthwise and not lengthwise. So again, it says more lokasha ha beglimi ha beamuni. It depends what type of garment you're dealing with. If you're dealing with a glima, again, let's go back to Rashi from before. If you're dealing with a regular daily garment, then you should go lengthwise. And if you're dealing with a hemiona, that's a belt. Rashi says eino nira elashnei rasheah hakluyin. You really only see the two ends of the belt which hang down. And therefore, you should smooth out the garment widthwise and not lengthwise. So it just depends what type of garment you're dealing with. Tan Rabban, it says the Braisa. You're not allowed to take from someone who cleans out the garment. You're not allowed to take threads. You're not allowed to take cloths from him because they don't belong to him. Because we said, in the Mishnah, we said that what the person cleaning out the garment, cleaning out the fabric, removes belonging to the owner, so you're not allowed to buy from him. But if the custom in a certain place is that they belong to the person cleaning out the garment, then of course you would be entitled to buy from him. In any place, whether it's the minog that they belong to the person cleaning out the fabric or not, you could take a pillow that's full of cloth, that's full of cotton, and you could also take a mattress that's full of cotton. My taima, why is it that you're allowed to take a mattress or a pillow that's full of this cotton stuff if you weren't allowed to take the cotton itself from the cleaner? So I answer the Gemara, kananu b'shinui. He was kona these items through a shinui. By taking them and inserting them into a mattress or inserting them into a pillow, they become his own, and that's why you're allowed to buy from him, because as you've seen many times throughout the Masechta, there's an idea of shinui kona, that when you change the state, you change the status, I guess, the position of an item, it becomes yours, and that's why you're entitled to take from this cleaner of the garment. Tanu Rabbanan, in lochin megardi, lo irin velo nirin velo punkelin velo shiure pikiyos. You're not allowed to take from a weaver these various types of items. Irin are like wads of cloth. Nirin, like heddles of cloth. Again, I'm not sure exactly what all these terms are. You have to speak to someone who's a professional weaver. I actually had a chavrusa when we were in Shibara Kotel in the Old City. We were learning Masechta Shabbos. So there's a perek there called Perek HaOreg, which is all about weaving. And he found some weaver in the Old City who I think was a firm person and had a whole loom and a whole setup. So he went to study by him and to try to get a better understanding into these sugyas. So nirin are the heddles. Below punkelin, threads of bobbin. Below shirei pikios, remnants of thread that are left on the spool of the loom. Avalokhin mehen begin minumar arev b'shasi tabui b'areg. But you can take from a weaver a garment which is spotted, which is speckled. And if you have erev and shti, you have the two directions of the weaving. And tavui, something which is spun, the areg, something which is actually woven. So ask the Gemara, amri hashta tavui shakli arug mibaya. Once I know that you can take something something which is spun, then isn't it obvious that you're allowed to take something which is woven? Why? Because says Rashi, arig mibaye hahavale tavui kodem la'arig. Before it's woven, it's spun. So if I know that you're allowed to take it when it's spun, then obviously you're allowed to take it when it's woven.
But isn't woven more it's a finished product.
Right, it's more of a finished product.
It's shinui.
Right, you're kodem b'shinui. Right. So says the Gemara, my arig tiki. What is this arig that we're referring to here? We're referring to specific types of chains, which says Rashi, the lotva and kodem lachen. You didn't spin them before. So you wouldn't necessarily know that if you can take something which is spun, you can also take something which is woven, assuming that the thing which was woven was already spun. Because we're dealing with something woven that was not spun yet. And that's how you don't know. It's not building on the process. It's not adding shinuyim, unless you wouldn't know that you could take it. Tan Rabban, in lochi min atzava lo otos velo dugmos. You can't buy from a painter, a colorer, a dyer, otos, signs of colors. Rashi explains the difference between otos v'dugmaos, examples of color. So let's see Rashi. Otos is k'shebevin lo beged nitzpoa, chotech mimenu me'at lifnei bailav, leidayim yiklor eretzeva. When someone brings you a garment to color, to dye, you cut off a little bit of it, and you want to test the fabric in front of the owner to see if it's going to be able to absorb the dye that you're using. Upamim shema'ako etzlo v'shachu bailim. Sometimes you leave that cloth over for yourself, and the owner never takes it. And dugmos are shemevin lo abailim tzemer litzboa, umevi imo me'at tzemer tzavua, ve'omer kazet tzvali. The dugmos, the examples, are the person will come to you with cloth and say, here's an example of the color that I want, and color my dye my garment with this color. So you can't buy either of these types of examples from the dyer. Below tlushim shel tzemer, you also cannot take parts of wool. Avalokhim hem beged tzavua tavui. And ubigadim, the bach adds in above. But you could buy from the dyer garments which are dyed or spun, or garments in general. So ask Gemara, hashta tavui shalko begadim baya. If I know that you could take something which is spun, then obviously you could take garments, because as we said before, it's a more finished product. So my begadim, nimti. What do we mean when we say begadim? We're referring to nimti, which is felt, and Rashi again tells us that these things, I think anyway, be'in sham tavui, that these things are not spun before, so it's not obvious that if you could take something which is spun, you could take begadim also, because the begadim we're referring to are not spun. Tanur Rabbanan, Hanotein Oros La'abdan, if a person is giving hides to a tanner, Hakitsuin Ve'atlushin Harei Elu Shel Bala Bayis, the trimmings of the hide and the hairs which come off in the process of tanning the hide belong to the owner. Ve'ha'ole Umishutaf B'mayim Harei Elu Shelo. Really, Ha'ole, I saw a version is Umishateif B'mayim, that it's what emerges in the cleaning of the hide, Harei Elu Shelo, that would belong to the tanner, not to the Bala Bayis. Now, im hayashachor, we said that if the threads on the garment were black, then on a white garment, it wouldn't match exactly, and therefore the launderer would be able to take everything, all of the threads of the black. So, Amar Rav Yehuda, says Rav Yehuda, katsra shmei, ukatsra shakile. Says Rav Yehuda, in Aramaic, we refer to a launderer as a katsra, whatever that means, but he explains, ukatsra shakile. Literally, katsra is milashon katsar, is milashon shortening, that the launderer shortens the garment. I think the Gemara explains elsewhere that the reason they call the launderer katsra, that he shortens the garment, is because the garment always shrinks, comes back a little bit smaller from the launderer, right? The drier, the laundry, ends up shrinking the garment. But Rabbi Huda is saying a different shot here. He's saying, katsra shakule, you're actually taking some of the fabric off the garment, and thereby you're making the garment shorter. So it's very appropriate that he's called a katsra, someone who shortens the garments, because he literally shortens the garments, whether through shrinking, or as Rabbi Huda is saying here, by taking off some of the fabric. Now, Amar Rabbi Huda, hakol olin minyan tcheles, v'yitzchak bri kapit alayu. Says Rabbi Huda, you have to have the tcheles. Essentially, we know in our tzitzis, we have holes where the tzitzis are connected to the garment, and they have to be three etzbos away from the, or three fingers, I think, away from the edge of the garment. And so any type of fabric would be ola to that cheshbon for how distant the hole where the strings are tied has to be from the edge of the garment. The Yitzchak Bri Kapit Alayu, he says, Yitzchak, my son, was makpid to remove all of these fabrics, all of these threads from the garment, and make sure that it was completely clean from the edge of the garment up to the hole where the tcheles, where the tzitzis were tied to the garment. Now, hachaya sheshir min achut, we said if the tailor leaves over from the thread, kedei litpor bo, in order to be able to still sew, or if you have a matlit, if you have a cloth, which is gimel al gimel etzbos. So ask the Gemara, v'kama litfor, what is the shear of still being able to sew with the thread that's left over by the tailor? So Amar Rav Asi, melo machat, and different gears of the bach, v'chutz lemachat. It's the length of the needle, and also a little bit outside of the needle. So how much is that little extra bit outside of the needle? Ibailahu, melo machat, v'chutz lemachat, kim lo machat, or dilma, melo machat, v'chutz lemachat, mashu. When we say that you need the length of the needle and a little bit more beyond the needle, is that little bit more beyond the needle also the length of a needle? Or is it just melo macha b'chutz l'macha mashu? Or is it just that you need the length of the needle and then a tiny bit more, but any amount would suffice? You just always need a little bit of extra space to have wiggle room with which to work. So tashma d'tanya, hachaya t'shir et achut pacho mikedei litvor bo. If a tailor leaves over the thread less than the amount that you'd be able to to sew. Or if you have a cloth which is less than three etzbos, if the owner is particular, if he cares and he wants these items to remain his own, then they would belong to the balabayis. But in balabayis makbid alein hare elu shalo. If the balabayis is not makbid on them, if the owner does not care about them, then they would belong to the tailor. They would belong to the person sewing the garment. So says the Gemara, from this brisa, which is different from the Mishnah, it's talking about shir mush are smaller, we can answer our question. Because if you assume that the amount that the Mishnah was referring to that would have to be left over on the thread of the tailor would be the length of the needle and then an additional shear, which is the length of a needle, then I understand how the brisa could talk about pachos mikan, about less than that amount, because pachos mikan chazi lesichta. If you have less than that amount, that would still be enough to make a loop on the garment. And therefore, I understand how the brisa could be talking about less than that amount and how it's possible that the balabais would be makbid on that because that actually would have a use. But if you assume that the length of thread that we're talking about here is the length of the needle and then just a tiny bit more, so pachut mikan the maichazi, what would a smaller amount, a smaller shear just less than that be useful for? So we can clearly infer from this brisa the answer to our question that the length of thread we're talking about is the length of the needle plus an additional shear beyond that, which is also the length of the needle. Now, masha harash motzi. So we had said that which a carpenter is motzi using an adz, which is the smaller axe, belongs to him, and using a kashil, which is the bigger axe. Again, matzad was the adz, kashil, the bigger axe, belonged to the baal bayis. So it says the Gemara Ura Minhu. We have a brisa which seems to say differently. Masha harash motzi b'matzad, the hanifsak b'migira hare elu shal baal bayis. What the carpenter is motzi using the matzad, using the adz, and that which comes off using a saw belongs to the baal bayis. V'ayotze mitacha mekdach or makdeach, that which comes out from a drill, umitacha rehitni, from a plane, v'hanigra b'migira, and that which is cut off in a different way, I guess smoothed off from the saw, that would belong to the bala, to the chaya, to the harash, to the carpenter. So what's the steer that the brisa is posing to the Mishnah? The Mishnah had said that what the carpenter is motzi b'matzad using the adz belongs to him, and the brisa says that what the carpenter is motzi b'matzad, what the carpenter is motzi with the adz belongs to the bala bayis. So how do we reconcile these two different statements? So Amarava ba'atra the tana didan ikatarti chatzini. Says Rava, in the location, in the locale of the Tana of our Mishnah, there are two types of axes. L'rabta karela kashil, l'zitarta karela matzad. We call the bigger axe a kashil, we call that a regular axe, and anything which emerges from that would belong to the balabayas. L'zitarti karela matzad, the smaller axe we call an adz, we call a matzad, and anything that emerges from that would belong to the carpenter. But ba'asher the Tana bara, chad hu de'ika, the karela hu matzad. In the location of the author of the brisa, there's only one axe, and they call that the matzah, they call that the adz, and that explains why the author of the brisa would say that that belongs to the balabayas, because he's assuming there's only one type of axe. But in our Mishnah, where we can differentiate between the two types of axes, then what emerges from the smaller axe will be considered to be not significant and will belong to the carpenter, but what emerges from the bigger axe will be considered to be significant and will belong to the balabayas. And lastly, the Gemara concludes with a statement from the Mishnah, "Vimaya osa etzel balabayas." If the carpenter was working in the property of the balabayas, then even the smallest things, even the sawdust, belong to the balabayas. It says in Gemara Tana Rabbanan, "Misatete avanim in bahem mishum geza." If you have people who chisel stones, there's no issue of theft in buying stones from them. Mefaske ilanos, mefaske gefanim. If you have people who prune trees or who prune vineyards, who prune grape plants. Minak fehigi, people who prune thorn bushes, or just regular bushes. Minak sheizraim, people who take weeds out of plants. The odre yirakos, people who plow vegetables. Bizman shebalabayis makbid aleim yesh bem mishum gezel. Things which the balabayis is makbid about, he's particular about, he wants to retain them as his own, then there would be an issue of theft in buying them, or in the person who's doing this work taking them. But ein balabayis makbid aleim hare elu shelo. If the balabayis, if the owner is not makbid, he doesn't care about these items, then there would not be an issue of theft, and they would belong to the person who's doing the work, and he could sell them to other people. Amar Rav Yehuda, says Rav Yehuda, kshut v'chaziz. Yeah.
named on that Mishum Gezel, someone who chisels stone. This is not that. We have an example of that.
Moshe with his the Luchos.
Just Mitzrayim, Moshe was what he had kept the
Luchos
from the Luchos.
Yeah.
The Luchos, yeah.
And that's how
he became
wealthy.
Rich.
Right, beautiful.
Fabulously wealthy.
Yes.
Yes, I think the Gemara says like that in the Darim, Moshe Rabbeinu became wealthy from the extra stuff which came off the Luchos, and that's consistent with this Gemara, Masat Te Avanim Ein Bahem Mishim Gezel. Beautiful. So says Rav Yehuda, Kasho Ksho V'chaziz Ein Bahem Mishim Gezel. Hops, or green grain, would not have an issue of theft. We assume the Baal Bayis is not makban on them, and they belong to a person working for them, and you could buy from them and you wouldn't have to worry. But Ba'atra the Kapti, Yesh Ba'an Mishum Gezel, in a place where they're makbid about these things, there would be an issue of theft. Amar Ravina, and says Ravina, Umata Machasya Atra the Kapti. Mata Machasya is a place where they are makbid on these things, and there would be an issue of Gezel. Again, listen to the Shor Machshava for beautiful pshat on that. But with that, we say, Hadron Alacha Gozel Basra, Islika La Masechta Baba Kama. We finished the last parak of Baba Kama and the entire Masechta. Mazel tov, and Emirat Hashem, tomorrow we'll start Bava Metzia.
Shkoyach. Shkoyach, thank you.